Good morning and welcome to Tech Days Online on a Friday. We've got the best day of content today. We're going to start talking about data science, fact or fiction. Now, I'm not going to put data science on my CV. I'm a business intelligence guy and I'm learning this stuff to be sure. So I've got an expert with me all the way from Tampa in Florida. I give you Buck Woody from the machine learning and data science team.
How you doing, Andrew? You all right?
Great. Great to see
all right.
You
again, yeah, good to be here, man. It's the weather's slightly different. It's just slightly different than Tampa.
You can tell me precisely. Right?
Yeah, I can predict whether it will be better or not. No, it's been great. I really enjoy being here. I used to live in the UK, as you know, and we're over here teaching some classes in data science. And so thought I'd stop by the studio today, and I knew you were doing your Tech Days Online. Let's get this done. And I work with the machine learning and data science team. I'm actually out of Redmond, Washington, the headquarters, but we're kind of scattered all over. We do a lot of training. So I do training of data scientists in partners and things to use our tools for data science.
We're going to get back to you on that. So data science, fact or fiction?
Yeah. Is it a buzzword? Is it real? Is it a new thing? What is it? I think the best way to think about it is that we can't just consider a bunch of tools. Microsoft has got a lot of data scientists that we've hired in, and obviously we think that this is going to be a place where technology is going. And of course we make tools, Office and PowerPoint and SQL Server and all these things. But we can't just have a tool in data science. There's actually some processes and things that are involved. In fact, let's go to a very simple explanation of what Cortana Intelligence is, which is our product suite that we use for data science. It's actually a platform and a process to perform advanced analytics from start to finish. And that feels a little bit like a marketing phrase, doesn't it? Yeah, but it isn't. There's actually a lot of meaning in here. When we think about this, we have to start with the process. You can't just grab a bunch of tools and say, I'm going to build a house. Yeah. You have to start with, this is how you build a house, yeah, and so on.
And equally, those specialists that come in, the builders and what have you, they're going to be working off some plans. And they've got
that's
an idea
right
of what you do before, what else you do.
Absolutely, and they follow a very specific process as well. And so we actually created a process, what we call the team data science process. So let's take a look at that. It maps well to something called the cross-industry process for data mining. It's a standard process that's been used for years, since the 90s actually, for data mining. But in large part, a data scientist, which has actually been a thing for quite a while now, sat off in a room and she would be working in there and you'd bring her some data. She would create some algorithms that would either classify things and people who bought this movie like this movie and so on. Or perhaps she'd make a prediction, it's going to rain tomorrow or whatever. And that created basically a big formula. Mm-hmm. And then you were able as a developer or a company to pass new information into the system and get that classification or that prediction. Yeah. And so because of that, she normally just sort of worked by herself in a black box and not many people understood the high maths that she used and so on. But it's different now. There's a lot of these data scientists that are being brought into companies, and they need to integrate into the teams that are already there doing all this work, the business teams and the technical teams. So we created the team data science process, and I've got that listed here. Let's take a look at a couple of these first. The first thing we have is sort of what we call the business understanding in CRISP-DM, the thing on the right. We actually have a phase for that called planning, environment, and ingest. And what we think about in this particular phase is finding the real question. Let me ask you a question. Mm-hmm. Let's assume I'm a business person and I come up to you and I say, Andrew, I'd like for you to write me a weather application. What's the first thing you would do if I were to ask you to do that?
Well, what is it you want to do with the weather?
I mean, yeah. So the first thing you do is, okay, let me figure out the screen size, and are you going to be using it on a mobile app, or is this Windows or iOS, or let me go get my Visual Studio and we'll start coding that thing up, right? Mm-hmm. But a data scientist does not do that. A great question that a data scientist asks to sort of suss out what you're trying to get done would be, what will you do once you know? So I'll ask you, okay, what will you do if you know what the weather is? Well, you might say, well, I want to know if it's going to rain tomorrow or not. Well, now that's a different question, isn't it? Mm-hmm. But the data scientist doesn't even stop there. she'll go on and say, okay, what will you do, Andrew, if you know it's going to rain tomorrow? What would you do?
Well, I might take an umbrella.
You take an umbrella, right? Very British thing to do.
Yeah.
Bring an umbrella. You take them. Or don't use them, but you take them everywhere. Yeah. They're used for tourist guides, I guess, mostly. But the point is that you would grab your umbrella. But what would you do if you had your umbrella?
Well, if it's raining, I'd put it up.
Right, and you'd stay dry, wouldn't you?
I would.
So in fact, the real question is, how do I stay dry? Whether it's raining or not, whether it's tomorrow or the next week, how do I stay dry? So what if I were to say, I could give you a route map such that you could leave home, go in the subway, and never be outside when it's raining?
I could wear my crocodile shoes.
There you wear your Crocs, yeah. Oh my gosh, please don't say that. So we might actually be talking about a route planner,
yeah,
not a weather app. And so that's the kind of thing we do in this planning phase. We try to get to the real live question. Easiest way to do that is to say, what will you do once you know the answer? Mm. In this same first phase, we actually set up our environment. We'll talk about the tools that we'll use and so on in just a moment. But we're also identifying all of the data that we're going to work with. We're not talking about ETL here. You know what ETL is, right? That acronym? Spell it out for me.
Extract, transform, and load.
I see. And what are those phases? Tell me what extract is.
Well, I need to go and round up the data.
Typically, right.
It's in different sources.
Right.
So I've got it in one place.
Right.
I'm going to mash it around a bit.
Yep.
And then I'm going to load it into a more structured format so that I can go and kind of let the rest of the business go and play. In a
play with that data. Yep. Okay, good stuff. And we've transformed it. Why? Why did we transform it?
Well, we might recognize that we need history. So we want to look at Buck Woody as he is today.
Yeah.
And Buck Woody when he was like, you know, over here the first time you see
yeah,
him.
Yeah,
that
yeah.
Young single guy.
Yeah, yeah.
Clubbing,
yeah.
As opposed to that sensible data scientist.
Yes, of course.
So we need to understand history. We may need to merge codes. You know, for companies, we've done a merger and acquisition. We've kind of got the product view in that company and this
yeah,
company
yeah.
and different general ledgers. And so we kind of want a unified view.
So that different general ledgers, yeah. Are you saying maybe the lengths of the data aren't the same and perhaps yeah. even the types?
Yeah. So, you know, that black polo shirt's going to look like one thing in this system and nothing in that system.
I see.
We want to show the combined.
And data types are super important.
That too. You know, we need to understand dates and calendars.
Yeah. Yeah. Because we use the proper dating system in the U.S., yeah, and then the British people use a different one, I think.
We understand dating.
Oh, yeah, okay. So now, here's the problem, though, I have with that. How many data types does SQL Server have? Do you know offhand?
I'm going to say 38.
Way north of 20.
Yeah.
How many does R have, the R programming language?
See, I was listening in your courses. I was listening.
Okay.
And I think you said 9.
9 or 10, yeah. That's a big difference between those two things, yeah? Mm. So when we think about that, if I transform it and get it into the right thing for SQL Server, which is what I normally do,
yeah.
Can I use it in R now? Well, not necessarily, because mm-hmm. I've got these data type mismatches. What if I'm using Hadoop? Mm-hmm. And what if I'm using Giraffe in Hadoop or something like that?
Right.
So yeah, I end up with all kinds of yeah. things where I don't know what the end product that's going to process the data is. In fact, I don't even know if I'm going to process the data multiple times. So we flip around in this very first stage. We flip around the ETL into EL and then T later.
Okay. All right. Yeah.
Yeah. So we bring it all in. We're just going to bring it all in. So let's take a look at the next phase that we have inside our data science process here. The next phase is the explore and visualize phase. CrispDM calls this data understanding. Now, this is interesting, too, because we've now brought the data in. We haven't looked at it yet. We've just brought it in. And so now we need to begin to look at it. And so we have tools like Microsoft R Server, Power BI, Excel, other tools you can use to interrogate that data to see things like outliers, representation. Is the sample that I've got representative of the whole, and so on.
So this is where I see a lot of people, like in R particularly, they do a lot of plots, and that almost seems to be an end in itself. But you're saying this is just to
get part of the process. It's just to get your head around it. In fact, yeah. It's interesting that you can use Azure Machine Learning, for instance, to find out what Azure Machine Learning needs to do a prediction in Azure Machine Learning. So it's kind of interesting in that way.
Yeah.
So let's take a look at the next phase we have in our process. The next phase we have is something called generating features. Now, within data science, if we're doing a prediction type model, we might teach the machine. It might do some machine learning. And the way it does that is just like you did in school. Your teacher knew the answers to the quiz, and she would show you the questions that you were having to solve, and then she would show you the answer and how she got there. Then after a while, she would simply show you the question, but she would not, in fact, show you the answer and say, Andrew, now you come up with the answer. Mm-hmm. And then she would grade you and say, okay, you said 2 + 2 = 5. That's great for large values of 2. But in fact, we need to think more about maybe 2 + 2 = 4. And you went, oh, okay, I see now. And because you did that, you learned. That's exactly the same thing we do inside machine learning, whether that's done in Azure ML or even R or Python. Mm-hmm. We're letting the machine see the question and the answer. It figures out how one thing got to the other, and then it tries to guess it on its own. To do that, we need two things. We need features, which are really just columns. So your age, your height, your weight, and so on, maybe your education level. And then I let it see your salary. And I do that with lots of people around the UK. And then later what I can do is send it Buck Woody's information, but not tell it how much Buck makes and say, what do you think he makes based on what you've seen? That answer, by the way, is called a label. Mm-hmm. Those factors that we use to find that are called features. So in this phase we're talking about now, we're actually finding those features. And there's statistical ways to find out if correlation is causation as well in that particular case.
Yeah. So I was doing a thing for the event guys.
Yeah.
And I was saying, so look, we worked out that people weren't turning up. The most likely reason that people were turning up or not turning up was the postcode compared with the postcode of the venue.
Interesting.
But then that kind of gets you thinking, well, it's not the postcode per se.
No.
Is it how far? So I might go and get some extra features, knowing that we saw that thing. Okay, now, is it the distance?
Exactly.
Or is it there's something special about that area? You know, it's miles from a bus station, or it's no, you know, or the venue itself.
Exactly. And you bring up a great point, because at no point in this process do you just stop. You may need to circle back and go get more data that you don't have. And this is the new world we're in. We're used to having all of our data on premises, and now we're going to go get it. I'm going to go get demographic data from one place, and I'm going to get weather data from another place, and so on, ad nauseum. So let's take a look at the next phase we have after we get our features. After we've gotten our features, we have two phases here, and you'll notice they're a different color.
I thought that was just you PowerPoint skills.
Yeah, my PowerPoint skills, my poor PowerPoint skills. No, these two particular steps are modeling and evaluating what we call create the model and train the model. These are for predictive or categorizational type tasks. Mm-hmm. So if we categorize something, people who like this movie might like this movie, or if we predict something, it's gonna rain tomorrow, that sort of thing. If we do one of those two things, we need to create a mathematical model. However, inside data science, you're not always doing just that. This is sort of advanced analytics. I might, in fact, just get to the phase where I've munged my data around and I wanna show it to someone, like we do in BI.
Yeah.
So BI is actually part of data science. It's not separate. It's not something we need to have as a clash, or one replaces another. They work well together. Yeah. So these two are placed in a different font and color to show that in not every single team data science process will you have a predictive or a categorization type task. So let's look at the next step we've got here. And this is our final step. This is where we deploy. And when we deploy something, we have a couple of ways we can do this. The first is we can look at it. And we've got Power BI and other things that we need to think about that. And we could also have APIs inside Azure ML, or perhaps we create data that we dump out into a database and say in Azure DB or something like that. Yeah. And you're able to see the data. So we consume what just happened based on our model. So that's the whole process.
Great. So we and how do we do that in this CS
thing? So how does this map? So we said process.
Yeah.
Now we need the platform.
Yeah.
Let's take a look. And you know what I'm going to do? It's a lot of products. You're not going to use them all, but it's a lot of products. You will use them all throughout your life, but you may not use them for a given product a production run. So let's come up with something that'll help you remember it. Even you can remember this. With your busy schedule and all the things that you have to keep track of, let's come up with some way that you can remember the parts of, I guarantee you that you'll remember the parts of the Cortana Intelligence Suite when we're done. I'll even test you. What do you think?
Okay, let's try.
Okay, let's try. All right, ready? Okay, here we go. All right, here we go. All right, so here is our Cortana Intelligence platform. We've got our process so far, and we've got these various pieces that you're seeing here on the screen. So I'm gonna let that sit there for just a moment. So we'll have the screen not moving for a bit, but we'll talk these through. Microsoft Azure is our cloud, Microsoft's cloud.
Yep.
It has infrastructure as a service, it has platform as a service, and it even has software as a service built within the platform. Mm. So here inside this first piece inside Azure, we say the word host it. Try it.
Host it.
Host it. Okay, good. So we've hosted our data, maybe our networking, maybe even our security. There's all kinds of features, identity, access authority, lots of things we can do for the data scientists, even virtual machines if they'd like to run their own Hadoop cluster and they don't want to use a service, they'd like to build it themselves, Linux, Windows, we have all of that. That's inside infrastructure as a service, and so here we say host it. Now the next feature we have is the Azure Data Catalog.
Now, I haven't heard too much about this one,
okay,
to be honest with you.
Okay, yeah, let's talk about the Azure Data Catalog for a moment. The Azure Data Catalog doesn't store your data. It actually stores a description of your data. And within your Active Directory environment, it allows everybody within the company to annotate that data, to give it a tag.
Right.
And so now I've solved a whole bunch of problems. I can have Andrew, who knows the most about our finance system, tell me where the finance data is stored, what kind it is, and so on. Not the names and passwords. I don't get any more access than I've ever had. Just that we have it, and here's the description of it. None of the data, just the description of it. So then we have Jane, who works over in a different department. She enters some data, and she happens to know where we keep sales figures. And so she enters those, and she tags those. People on her team tag it as well. Now, as the data scientist, when she comes in to work the next day, she can simply type finance data. And based on what's been tagged, she finds the most authoritative data sets there are. So because this is a documentation system, we say, dock it.
Dock it.
Dock it, right? So we've got host it and we've got dock it so far. All right, let's go to the next feature. Again, you'll use some of these, but not all. But this is part of that. The Azure Data Catalog helps me find the most authoritative data. Next, we move to the Azure Data Factory. Now, the Azure Data Factory is an orchestration feature. It allows you to take all these things, R servers and Hadoop and SQL Data Warehouse, and move it through a pipeline from beginning to end. So here we say, how about move it, move it?
Move it.
Yeah, everybody knows that one. Yeah, if you've had kids, you know this one, right? And maybe even if you haven't, you know this one very well. So it's an orchestration feature. Yeah. All right, let's look at the next one.
Okay.
The next one we have is the event hubs. Now what the event hubs allows us to do is have the Internet of Things, like these watches and cars and so on, stream absolutely tons of data back, and it will bring all that data into our solution. So for this one, let's say bring it.
Bring it.
Okay, so what have we got first?
Host it.
That's Azure, right?
Yep.
And what's next?
Dock it.
That's Azure Data Catalog, right? And what's next?
Move it.
And that's the Data Factory, right? And what's next?
Bring it.
That's the Event Hub. See, you're learning. This is amazing that you're able. That's what I'm saying. So let's look at the next one we've got here. The Azure Data Lake is a system that allows you to work with large sets of data, really big data. And so this is a little like Hadoop. We have that as well. We'll talk about that in a moment. But it allows you to work with big sets of data, and it's in two big pieces. There's a storage part, and then there's a compute part that sits over the top of that. And you have languages like Hive or a version of SQL that you can use as well called USQL and so on. So here we say store it. Very good. Okay, great. Let's look at the next one. The next one's kind of a family.
Home.
Yeah. Azure SQL DB, Azure SQL Data Warehouse, and Azure Document DB. So when we think about these are structured or semi-structured style data. And what does that even mean? Well, it basically means they're related well. So let's say this is relate it.
Relate it. And just one note there, by the way, boys and girls, the DocumentDB, that's storing JSON, not Word documents.
That's right, yeah, DocumentDB. Well, interestingly enough, you can take a Word document and tear it apart into JSON, can't you?
Yeah.
So the world is made out of JSON now. It used to be made out of XML for developers, but the developers decided the world's made of JSON. So that's a JSON-style database. Again, you're not using all of these, but you can use any of these to get us through our process. We're mapping all this back to our process. Mm-hmm. Let's go to the next one. Azure Machine Learning and Microsoft R Server. And these are our collaborative tools that allow people in Linux, Windows, Apple to use an environment where they're not only able to create an experiment, but they're able to share it, and even further, to click a button and publish an API. And that API can now be consumed. We talked about earlier, now I can make that phone thing that predicts the best route to go somewhere based on our prediction model. So here we say, this one's easy, learn it. Yeah, learn it. So let's go through it again. You ready? Microsoft Azure.
Host it.
Okay, Azure Data Catalog.
Docket.
Docket, good. Azure Data Factory.
Move it,
good. Event Hubs.
Bring it.
Very good. Data Lake.
Store it,
okay. SQL DB, Data Warehouse, Document DB?
Relate it,
and Azure Machine Learning?
Learn it.
Okay, good, we're getting there.
We are getting there.
All right, let's go to our next one. Azure HD Insight is Microsoft's fully Apache compliant Hadoop implementation. And when we think about this one, the Hadoop Zoo is based on distributed compute and distributed storage. And there are many, many projects, what's called the zoo, on top of that. And then we've added a lot of syntactic sugar, interaction between Polybase, interaction between SQL Server, and so on into this world. But we've made it available as a service. So now I can process a huge amount of data, just an absolutely huge amount of data, and I can scale that so that I'm able to process the data. When the processing is done, I can release the processing resources, no longer paying for them, and only keeping the results, the data. And usually we're doing something where we're reducing the dimensionality of that data.
Yeah.
So here we say scale it. Say that one, scale it. Yeah. All right, next we go to the next two. And the first one is Power, let's talk about Stream Analytics for a moment. Let's definitely cover off on that. So Stream Analytics is a complex event processing system. Mm-hmm. If we think about a thermostat is a simple event processor. It monitors one thing, the temperature, and it does one thing. It cuts the air conditioning on or off. In Florida, it never goes off, so it doesn't even have to do any thinking.
What is that air conditioning thing?
It's what we use in Florida to stay alive. But a complex event system can watch data that's coming through all the time, a Twitter feed, telemetry from something, and basically do things based on that. Store that data off, perhaps. Do anomaly detection, perhaps, and so on. So here we say stream it.
Stream it.
Okay. Last two. Power BI is Microsoft's interactive reporting tool, not a reporting tool you'd make PDFs or printouts with, but one that you would do to make interactive reports you can look at. That's available for iOS, Android, Windows. It's on a web as a service. It's in Excel, and you can get the desktop for free.
And in my world, we can actually embed it in other applications.
That's absolutely correct. Yeah, it has the ability to be embedded to where if you're writing an app, you can put Power BI in it. We don't even take the credit. You get the credit, right? And finally, we have Cortana, the cognitive services, and the bot framework.
Yeah.
And so when we think about these last two, we're thinking about things where we can actually interact with the computer naturally. We can talk to it. So for Power BI, we'll say, see it.
Yep.
Repeat.
See it.
And for Cortana, we do?
Say it,
right? So we see it and we say it. This is the results. All right, I promised that you'd learn this by the time we're done. So close your eyes. All right, here we go. Ready? Microsoft Azure.
Host it.
Azure Data Catalog.
Dock it.
Azure Data Factory.
Move it.
Azure Event Hubs.
Bring it.
Azure Data Lake.
Store it.
Okay. Azure SQL DB, Data Warehouse, Document DB.
Relate it.
Okay. And then we're scaling with Azure Machine Learning. I'm sorry. We're learning with Azure Machine Learning, so we say.
Learn it.
And then we're scaling with HD Insight, we say.
Scale it.
Good. And then we have Stream Analytics.
Stream it.
Stream it. Very good. Yeah, good job. And then we have Power BI.
See it.
And we have Cortana.
Say it.
And we have Say It. Okay. So now you've learned. You're a data scientist. You're done. You've got the job. You've got the job. All right. Speaking of the job, we've got this process. We've got the platform. We've sort of got all the ingredients and the spices.
Yeah.
And now we have our recipe.
Mm-hmm.
So are we ready to go?
Well, I kind of guess kind of it. I mean, there's some deep stuff hidden away in these. I mean, a few people might say they're experts in Azure, but they were probably an expert in Azure last week because we changed a couple of things. Mm-hmm. Like we opened some UK data centers.
That's right. That's absolutely correct. Last week, right? Yeah, it happened, yeah.
Or we've added some new things in. So we kind of keep needing to learn this stuff, even if we kind of think we know that thing. But it occurs to me these are going to require different skills.
Yeah.
You know, we've had some great speakers on this week already talking about, say, the Bot framework.
Mm-hmm.
My good friend Prathi talking about Power BI.
Yes.
So I kind of see that different people are going to be in different parts of this.
That's
more
right.
Than others.
That's right. Yeah. So you have really three ways, I think, about this whole data science, data scientist role. Is it a role or is it a series of tasks that you do? My daughter works with biology.
Mm.
She studies salamanders. Don't make that face, because it turns out they're a linchpin species, and there's a particular fungus that's gotten into the water, and if it does, it can kill them off, and that has a really bad effect on lots of ecosystems. Okay. So she's part of a study at the University of South Florida that is determining how they can help the salamander population in this way. She uses R and some of these other machine learning type tools to figure out, to do predictive things. They have virtual animals. So you don't have to experiment on a live animal. Oh, you can spin up a few salamanders and then work with them and then turn them off when you're done. So you don't have to experiment on animals and things. So she's doing data science work, but she's not a data scientist. There is a formal role for data scientists. You can go to college. It's a fairly lengthy program, heavy with maths, things around statistics and so on that you have to learn. And you can get a degree in data science. I think you still need to even work in an industry for a while before you can call yourself a true...
So a good example, you used to be a sergeant in some sort of organization.
Yeah, yeah,
didn't you?
Yeah.
And you're it takes you a while. You can't just be a sergeant.
That's correct. You can't come in as a sergeant. Yeah.
You've been out there somewhere. And then you get... So you could come in as an...
Airman, in my case.
Or you could come in as some sort of lieutenant because you've got a degree.
Sure.
But they're not really ready yet because they haven't actually been out there.
That's right.
So you've kind of got the academic guy and you kind of went through that. I kind of... studied stuff, and then I did some study in your spare time.
That's right. That's exactly right. So that brings up the second mode that you could become a data scientist by self-education, and we've got some resources at the end. In fact, Microsoft has a course that you can go learn for free how to be a data scientist. It's non-trivial. This is not something you'll pick up next week. It's going to take time, and there's math involved. So lots of math. So there's work to be done, but that if you're not going to go and become a full-fledged data scientist just yet. If you're looking for that sort of next part of your career, we talked about those phases and the tools. You need somebody in every one of those phases.
Mm.
So you could become the person that will help the data science team with Power BI. Or perhaps you're working on the ingestion phase, or maybe you want to learn R and help with that data discovery task. We've got all the tools from ingestion, just like we said in that original sentence, from start to finish. Now, you don't have to use Microsoft stuff, but we have everything there for you to use. And we've actually got some resources that we can share in just a moment to help you do that.
So I kind of guess even when I was working in BI, you saw the same kind of thing. There was the guy who would do that ETL thing.
Right.
Then there was the guy who built the cubes. I used to use cubes quite a lot. And then we always had specialists in visualization. You know, like I say, again, Prathi's excellent talk there. And that's a skill in itself. In a small organization, I guess one person might do a bit of all of those.
Yeah.
As it gets bigger.
You're exactly right.
But you need to peer over the fence at the next thing in the process.
I think so. Yeah. And that's why we have that team data science process.
Yeah.
You know, that really helps quantify what you need to do next.
Yeah. And those hardcore data scientists, the purist we briefly discussed, perhaps a bit like a surgeon in a hospital. You've got the anesthetist, you've got the specialist in blood, you've got the pathologist.
Yeah.
And you've got a general manager,
sure.
Because this is a project, right? If we're making decisions off this stuff, it isn't just we talked about iteration and not quite certain of where we're going, you know, and I think some people are a bit confused, but there's no perfect answer here because learning implies making mistakes.
That's right. That's exactly right.
But you still have a process in
place. That's right.
You're still trying to get somewhere.
That's right. That's right. I think at this point, it probably makes sense for us to land this thing and talk a little bit about some resources we might have. So let's look at a few resources that you have online and available to you at any time to learn more.
Yeah, so I'm doing this top thing. EdX is an open platform. It's not a Microsoft platform, and it does this MOOC thing, which is a massive
open online course.
Which is kind of like Harvard and Berkeley, Berkeley, if I'm pronouncing that properly, are doing all these kind of stuff, and you can go and like be on the course, but you're not on the course. You have to pay a huge ton of money if you want to get the badge from MIT or wherever it is, but you can do these courses, and there's a small fee you pay to each
That's right.
So they're modular based, and even one of these, I'm doing the one at Columbia at the moment, DAT 101X in the top of this, and that's the one you probably want to watch the first, because it's going to do that theory stuff that we've just lightly touched on here. But it is going to go into the probability, it is going to go into statistics, and you're going to test out on the numbers. And so you can feel rightly proud you've got it. You can't game this.
That's right, that's absolutely correct.
You know, and what's the point anyway, frankly, because I'm interested in acquiring the knowledge, the skill. I don't necessarily need the piece of paper, especially at my age.
One of the links that you saw a moment ago on the screen, and you can we'll have those links available for you. But one of those links was a blog I write called buckwoody.wordpress.com, Buckwoody all one word, .wordpress.com. If you go to that, it's called The Backyard Data Scientist, and it's squarely aimed at someone who's starting out. And they're in a data profession, they're already in the data profession, but they're starting out on their journey to data science, and they're like, okay, what's my next step? How do I do this? You can start there, and there are multiple links to free courses all over the web. You can self-educate, it will take time, but you can also get started right away.
But also, I think what we would say is that you're not just going to go and do that in isolation, like go dark for a couple.
That's right.
You can bring it
every
day to work.
Yes.
You start acquiring this and become a little bit more analytic at work. And then you're going to be that maybe trusted person now who's, okay, so you're interested in this stuff, and then you can start to have a bit of a conversation with the data science.
Absolutely.
Hopefully, if they're fairly open, they're going to share some stuff with you, and you start understanding this language, you know, understand who this guy called Bayes is. Spearman. We can throw random. I'm not into scoring points here.
Yeah.
But you can kind of, you can start to go on that journey and bring some of that back to work.
Absolutely. Well, listen, it's been great stopping by. I've got to get to a plane,
I've got
so I better do that. And have you got more folks coming on after us, or what's going on here?
Well, we've got other stuff coming on, but before you go, I've
yes,
got a
sir.
Couple of questions. So
sure.
You're on a plane, you're training people every day.
Yes, sir.
So so clearly you are the job, right? You're imparting your skills. So what are kind of some of the tips you would say to somebody doing this? You know, what do you see sort of people misunderstanding stuff in that part?
You know, the major problems that we have all the time, and this is not even with just people misunderstanding things, but it's actually with people who are seasoned in this area, well-seasoned in this area. The number one thing is not starting out by getting the right question first.
Yeah.
There's the desire to jump into an algorithm. I want to go play with the algorithms and make these fancy things that will do facial recognition. If facial recognition isn't what's needed, you'll end up with a project that no one needs. And you'll end up with your stuff in the dustbin. You just don't, no one cares about
right.
it. So the number one thing I would say is practice very hard in discovering the right question. Again, the easiest least accusatory way, the easiest way to say why, but that sounds a little accusatory. Let's stop by a place so I can get some fish and chips, and you might say why. That sounds accusatory. But the better way to say it would be something around the lines of, what will you do when you have what I'm done with? When I finish and I give you the answer, what will you do with the answer? Just like we did with the weather example.
Yeah.
So that's the first thing I think I'd focus on. It is really focusing on asking the right questions. And if you're a data professional out there and you're just getting started, my recommendation is go learn R. And the reason why is R is a lever that will pull you into other areas, the statistics and so on. And it's got an immediate benefit, and it's in SQL Server 2016 and higher, so it's already baked into the product.
You know, you said earlier about a question leading to a question.
Yeah.
So I get a lot of people saying, well, the Python R debate, would
yeah.
you care to, I mean, we don't, kind of care at Microsoft because
yeah.
neither of those are a language. We've invested fairly heavily in both of them.
Yeah, we have.
So why and what that is that about?
So yeah, the age old issue here is data scientists will usually use either R or they'll use Python. And so you get this divide. And then, of course, if I'm using something, it must be the correct thing and everybody else must be wrong, or perhaps I'm wrong and that's just not going to happen. They're both just tools. We have Python and Python notebooks inside Azure Machine Learning, as well as R. You can use either one that you're familiar with. In general, what I've seen, this is my experience and what I've seen, I've taught at the University of Washington and I was on the data science board there. We did a fairly extensive set of research before we created the data science project at University of Washington, before we created that program, that degree program, on what data scientists do every day. And so it was about 50-50 Python and R. R is incredibly mature, especially in the statistical area. So you'll see, if you need to work with data, R is just a natural tool. Python, on the other hand, I see people that have a programming background usually come through the Python route. It also has several libraries, NumPy, SciPy, SciKit, other things that you can use. And it also does very well with large sets of data. In general, this is the way I've kind of looked at it. If I'm going to do something further within a tool in the data, I might use Python. If I'm getting the data and the end result is going to be the analysis, I might do that in R. But I think either is fine.
Yeah, and there is that Python developer who wants to get into data science, has gone that route.
Absolutely.
So carry on.
Yep.
But if you haven't studied anything. So in this degree course, you can choose. We're not going to mandate.
Absolutely. Within our degree course, there's actually a bifurcation where you'll say, okay, I'm gonna go the R route, I'm going to go the Python route, and we've got classes for both.
Yep, so great piece of politics there. I've asked you a hard question and you haven't given me an answer. So I am going to put you on a plane now, Buck.
All right, I better get to the airport.
Get back home, because otherwise Marjorie is going to be...
Yeah, she'll be looking for me. Yeah. Thanks so much, Andrew.
Been a real pleasure, Buck.